Board Game Bros.
Hello, listeners.
Hey, everybody.
It's another episode of the Board Game Brothers podcast. I'm Jeffrey Craig.
And I'm Matthew Craig.
We're brothers in real life.
And game designers in real life.
And this is our podcast where we talk about board games. And today, we have got a stone-cold classic that I'm frankly surprised we haven't talked about yet.
Yeah.
It's a regularly scheduled weekly episode where we select one board game to discuss in detail. And this one... Yeah, I'll let you say,
Matthew. Yeah, it's like, you know, so we discuss, you know, what games we're going to cover on any given week. And every time we mention this, it's like, didn't we cover that? No, we haven't. So we're talking about a gateway game called King Domino, designed by Bruno Cathala and published by Blue Orange Games in 2016.
Right, so we're going to talk about King Domino. Oh,
and as the cover of the box will certainly tell you, it won Spiel des Jahres 2017.
Yeah, it mentions that twice on the cover of the box.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about how to play King Domino, how to win in King Domino, and we're going to talk about how it's designed. So, for a short description on what King Domino is all about, in King Domino, players attempt to assemble the highest scoring kingdom by drafting tiles and arranging them in their kingdom. Each tile is a rectangle made up of two squares that can have up to two different terrains on it, on its halves. Or sorry, two different terrains, but there's how many? Six terrains.
Yeah.
Available in the game.
On two its out halves. Of six.
Yeah, and each terrain can have anywhere from zero to three crowns on it. When you place a tile in your kingdom, it must be adjacent to a tile that matches one of its terrains, and it cannot extend beyond a 5x5 grid. After all the tiles have been drafted, players total points by multiplying the number of crowns by the number of connected squares for each terrain in their kingdom. And the player with the most points wins.
Yep.
So that's the shortest description of the game that I could manage. It's a game about drafting tiles to put in your kingdom. The tiles will have terrains, and they may also have crowns, and the crowns times the number of squares of a terrain type connected in your kingdom will give you points. Most points wins. So it's relatively simple. Now, this is a tile drafting game.
Yeah.
And that will come into the strategy. So
let's go ahead and talk about that, because that's like the first thing you do.
Right. So let's get a little more specific on how to play the game.
Right.
So everyone starts with a single square tile with their castle on it. For the purposes of the rules where a tile has to be adjacent to a tile that shares the terrain with it, your castle tile counts as all terrains. So you can put any tile can attach to it.
Yep.
So you start with that, and then you deal out a number of tiles equal to the number of players, and these are the actual terrain tiles that are a 1x2, you know, square, grid, rectangle. And then each of those squares can have terrains on it.
Yeah.
Now, and these tiles... Yeah. Go ahead.
And on the backs of these tiles, there is a number that numbers from 1 to 48. And when you're setting up the game, I believe you take out one tile for each player?
When you set up the game, you don't have to take out any tiles for a four-player game. But if you play with less than four players, then you essentially have to take out enough tiles to have made up that fourth player's...
Oh, right, yeah, that's right. So you shuffle these randomly and stack them up, and then when you deal out the tiles and sets of the number of players, you arrange them in a line from lowest number to highest number, and then you flip them over to show what the front of the tiles actually are. Mm-hmm. Now, you have this little pawn, like a meeple, that you use to draft the different tiles, and when it's your turn, you take your meeple and put it on one of those tiles. Then once everybody has selected a tile, you go ahead and deal the next set of tiles and arrange those in in ascending order, and then you flip those over, and then from the top going down, so from whoever drafted the lowest number tile previously to whoever drafted the highest numbered tile previously, players take turns in that order, picking the next one and placing the one they just picked.
Right.
So basically, you
place the tile in your kingdom when you remove your pawn from it. and select your next tile. So the order that the tiles are in, like you said, is the turn order. And because you assemble them from lowest to highest based on the number on the back of the tile, that sort of puts different strategies in this game, if you will, at quicker in the turn order or slower in the turn order.
Right. It should be noted that generally the lowest numbers have no crowns, but the lowest numbers, so 1 through 9, I believe, all have double terrain. Or no, right. 1 through 12, actually.
Right, because 12 is the 2 dirt tiles.
Yeah. And then the highest numbered tiles have the mines, which have the most crowns.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're talking about terrains. We haven't talked about all of them yet. So let's just go over what they are.
Sure.
So there's wheat fields, which are sort of yellow looking terrains. There's forests,
which are dark green.
Yeah, dark green with trees on them. There's water or ocean, which is blue. There is meadows, as I like to call them, or prairies, which are green. Yeah. I don't know if plains works because it could be kind of confused with the first terrain, the wheat fields.
Pastures.
Those could be considered plains. Yeah, I call it a prairie.
Sure.
Because there's like a little bit of flowery stuff on it. And then dirt.
Desert, wasteland. Fifth. We've used these interchangeably as well.
Yeah, let's call it wasteland. And then the final is mines, which is pitch black.
Yeah.
And have like sparse like cave features on them.
Well, all of them have some sort of large rock structure.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's not like it doesn't take up the whole thing. The most most of the tile is pitch black.
Yes.
So there's 6 of these terrains, and each of the terrains, as I listed them just now, has a different frequency and amount of possible crowns that you can find on those terrains. So at the start of this list, the plains, forests, oceans, and then prairies have less frequent crowns than the others, but they also have fewer crowns per appearance.
Let me put it like this. So the most abundant terrain type is the fields, with 24 tiles that have fields on them. And then it actually goes in the order you introduce them: field, forest, water, plain, waste, mines. It's not necessarily that those top 4 have the fewest crowns. The water and forest tiles have 6 and 7 tiles with crowns. The plains or the prairies have 10 tiles with crowns. It's more so the ratio of crowns per total tiles with them is lower at the top,
right,
but not the total crowns.
Gotcha. So they have just as many crowns as the wasteland and mines?
I believe even more so, because mines have...
But they show up less frequently in those terrains.
Yeah.
And at a lower amount. So when a crown does show up on, say, a field or a forest, it'll only usually be 1 crown.
Yeah.
Occasionally you'll see 2 crowns on the prairies. But it's also, for the most part, you'll just see 1 crown in prairie terrains.
Right.
So the list that I gave goes in order of most to least abundance of that terrain type showing up, and least to most frequency of crowns showing up.
Pretty much, yeah.
So that means that if you're going for something, you know, that's a higher number, the higher number things are going to be the higher number tiles are going to have more crowns on them. That's where you're going to see more of the prairies, more of the wastelands, and more of the caves. But those are guaranteed points, because the way that you get points in this game is you multiply the number of crowns times the number of squares that share a terrain type that the crowns are on that are connected.
Right.
And so if you don't have any crowns, because all the tiles and the higher end of things
are
don't have crowns very often are crownless, yes, right. then you're not getting any points. So getting right. those guaranteed crowns on those terrains with the higher frequency of crowns on the higher end of these tile numbers is going to be guaranteed points.
Yes. Yeah, at some point you will have to dip lower in the turn order to get points. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so this game is all about managing that, managing getting the most points you can per tile you draft, but also managing where you end up in the turn order so that you are guaranteed to get the best tile for your kingdom.
Yes.
So as you're drafting tiles, you're also adding them to your kingdom, and you're trying to make it all fit inside a 5x5 grid. So let's talk a little more about that.
Oh, yeah.
So each tile is essentially two squares put together.
Right.
So if you were to picture, say, your kingdom or your castle is a single tile, say you put two tiles on either side of it end to end, you know, lengthwise, that would be five squares wide. So yeah. that would be the maximum width of your kingdom. Your castle would have to be in the center column of that 5x5 grid if you place your tiles like that. Then you can arrange the rest of your tiles however you want around them. Or you could arrange your tiles in a different way. The way that this game works is that your square tile that you start with your castle on it, doesn't have to be in the center. Like in that example I just described, it could be anywhere in your kingdom. It could be in the corner, and you could build the rest of your kingdom outwards, you know, in two directions from there rather than in each direction.
Yeah.
And you don't have to decide that until later in the game, when you sort of find your exterior border, when you find your dimensions
right.
For your kingdom.
Right. Yeah. It's pretty safe to like build a row or column of four tiles and then mm-hmm. fill it in if you need to later.
Yeah. If we're talking strategy, it's best not to decide the, you know, exterior, the edges of your kingdom too quickly, because that will limit your options of where you can place tiles. And you always want to have as many options as you can so that you're getting the maximum value from each tile you pick up. And maximum value means that each tile is either scoring you points or has the potential to score you points.
Right.
And by putting something up on the edge of your kingdom, that means you can't put anything on the other side. So if it never gets connected to anything with a crown on it, then you're wasting points there.
Right. It should also be mentioned that so like in general, you want to connect every square of the same terrain type, because that's how you get the most points, is by having more squares times crowns and whatever. But mm-hmm. But if you put things on the opposite side of the castle, it'll be a lot harder to connect those, because like if you have something that is two to the right of the castle and one to the left, you need to spend like two or three tiles to actually wrap those two together, assuming that you're only using tiles of the same type.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of why, like, I think generally you want to try and avoid putting your castle directly in the center. But also there is a optional rule that gives you bonus points if you do so.
Right. So if you're playing with the bonus rule, then just weigh every possible arrangement of tiles against yeah. those bonus points.
I think
bonus points.
Yeah. I think generally having your castle in the corner is the easiest way. And having it like one diagonal from the corner, you have to be really careful not to leave a space open, because so you don't have to place every tile you draw. In fact, there's a chance that you might not be able to place a tile at all because mm-hmm. of the placement rules. So you can always opt not to place a tile, but there is also a chance that you can't place a tile just due to not having room for it. Because, right. you know, every tile is a 1x2. And so if you have a row of four tiles and on either side of that row you can't fit a tile vertically, then that means that those corners cannot be filled in, because you only have one space left on either side of that row of four, but the only way to fill in one space with a 1x2 tile is to have it vertically.
Right. Essentially, if you arrange your tiles such that you will have either like a single enclosed tile space, you know, or like a single enclosed square, or you have a square enclosed against the edges of your board, you'll never be able to fit a tile there. Also, having that means that there's going to be another place on your board with another open square. So those two squares make up that tile that you couldn't place because you misarranged your tiles. But it's not necessarily a bad thing, right, if you end up with something like that.
Yeah, you could always
just because not every tile there's it's probably going to be the case where by the end of the game there's at least one tile, maybe two, that isn't actually scoring you any points. You just had to take it and you put it, you know, in your kingdom with aspirations for it to score points in the end, but maybe you just never got around to picking up a crown to activate those tile terrain types.
Yeah.
And so if you have to ditch a tile because you misplaced your tiles and you ended up with some blank spaces, it's not the end of the world because it's likely that the people that were able to fill their entire kingdom
didn't need
the entire 5x5 grid. They may have not needed one of those 12 tiles. And by the way, you mentioned there's 48 tiles in the game. Each player needs exactly 12 tiles to create a full kingdom.
So when you're playing with three people, you would take out 12.
Exactly.
Okay. And I also want to mention that if you need to throw away a tile at some point, then you could always try and just take the lowest numbered tile on a given round, throw it away, and then that way you have first pick of the next round.
Right. It might be the case where, yeah, there's like maybe there's just nothing available for you, or you if there's nothing available for you, then just take a tile and don't place it in your kingdom. It's always optional to put a tile in your kingdom. So if you don't think you can make your points back with it, then just ditch it.
Yeah. Let's see. So
this is a drafting game.
Oh, yeah.
In that you are selecting tiles from a shared pool that all the other players are selecting tiles from. And we talked about the frequency and abundancy of each terrain and the crowns that appear on them. So because of that, there is some drafting strategies involved in this game.
Right. Yeah.
So the main ones being reading your opponent's intentions, identifying strategies that are open, meaning not many other opponents are going for the same things as you, and then hate drafting.
Right.
So just to go over what these will mean.
These are drafting fundamentals.
Yeah. These are drafting fundamentals that come into play in this game because
in every drafting game.
So reading your opponents, in this game, it can be kind of easy because you can see, you know, what their most abundant terrain types are.
Yeah.
And you can guarantee that they're probably going to go for those.
And you can also, if you're not the first person to pick, you can see what their next tile is going to be as well.
Mm-hmm.
So you can get some extra information from that.
Right.
Right.
And you can see, like, if somebody has a lot of one terrain but no crowns, they're probably desperate for that kind of thing. If somebody already has a bunch of crowns, then they're probably just looking to get a bunch of terrains of that type. So reading opponents isn't very difficult because there's a lot of open information in this game.
Pretty much everything.
Identifying open strategies is just figuring out which terrain is, you know, least wanted by your opponents. This one can be a little tricky just because sometimes your opponents can switch gears a little bit and go for a couple different types of terrains.
Right.
You know, they're going to be drafting tiles that have their primary terrain on them, but maybe a secondary terrain on the other half of the tile that they might want to try and score points from later. So there's a chance that not every terrain you go for, or there's a chance that everyone goes for each terrain. So this one might be identifying the one terrain nobody cares about, but it might also just be the one terrain that everyone else cares about the least.
Yeah.
Hate drafting in this game, it will really only come into play if you're in second place, because otherwise you just kind of want to go for as much points as you can. Usually hate drafting is negative or 0 points for you, and you're taking away, you're giving like negative points or 0 points essentially to another player. It's 0 points on both sides.
Right. There is the exception that you can draft crowns, which are positive for you and negative for the opponent.
True. You can hate draft crowns with some bonus to you.
Yeah.
But it's not a net zero for everybody. But you really only want to hate draft if you're in second place, because otherwise you should really just be trying to maximize your points.
Yeah.
Like, for example, if you're in third place, and you can gauge everybody's points by just looking at their boards. You can totally just total it up, you know, right there on the spot, although that'll take a while, and the people you're playing with probably will want you to hurry your turn up a little bit. So just kind of gauge things.
Mm-hmm.
And you can try and hate draft people if you're in second and the person in first, you know, there's a pretty crucial tile that will like solidify their lead. Yeah. I'd say that's when you hate draft.
Yeah.
But of these three strategies, the most important one in this game is to find the open avenue.
Yes. Yeah. Because crowns are so limited, even within like how many tiles of a given terrain, those are hotly contested. And if two people are fighting over crowns, you're likely not going to get any of them, or even like one. So like if two people are fighting over crowns and they each get three, then if three people are fighting over crowns, then they'll get like 2, 3, 1 or something. Whereas like you could ignore that and get five crowns from another terrain type. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, I mean, like we said, each terrain type has relatively the same number of crowns available to them.
More or less,
in different frequencies, but it's relatively the same number of crowns, more or less.
Yeah.
So if you picture it just like that, you know, if that pot is being split in two, then and one of them isn't, if you go for the one that only you care about and all the other pots get split, then you're going to end up with double the points that everybody else has.
Yeah. And so in that regard, I do want to talk about like what terrains are good / how they work. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense. So sure. Forests are like second most abundant, and they also have the most doubles, and they also have a lot of crowns. Because there are four tiles that are like forest plus field that have one crown. And then there's like forest plus water and all that. So forests are pretty easy to do, and they kind of combine with a lot of other stuff. Water also has a lot of crowns because they have four tiles that are water plus forest, with the water having a crown. So like water and forest both are kind of similar. Like they have a lot of doubles. They have a lot of good, or they have a lot of solo crowns, stuff like that. Let's see. The prairies have the, like, of the four abundant terrain types, they have the most double crowns.
So yeah, usually, by the way, I think it is fair just to kind of segment these into the first four, which are plains, forest, water, and prairies, and then cut the that
two, yeah,
and then the other two, wasteland and mines, because you can even just by playing the game you can see that there's a stark difference in the frequency and abundance between like just the prairies and right. The wasteland,
right? Yeah. Plains have two that have two crowns on the plains.
Prairies.
Right. So prairies, they're good if you can get one of those, which means that they are a pretty good investment if you get the two crown prairie early, or like you can build a solid grouping of prairies and still get good points from it, from a single tile. Fields are really tricky because while they're the most abundant, they're the most sparse with crowns. They only have a few one crowns, and all of them are different field plus terrain type. So it's like they have one of each field plus one other terrain. So they kind of are auxiliary a lot of the time to other stuff. Mm-hmm. And since fields are the most abundant when next to mines or wastes, it's kind of like fields are more for that strategy where like you get either mines or wastes, and then you also have fields alongside with you.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's like Fields are good if you need to get some extra points and you don't have any other terrains that are good, because they do have a chance of building into just the more flat points from wastes and mines.
Right.
But I don't think they're as good as a build around as the other three main terrain types.
Sure. Now we're talking about like build arounds versus, you know, auxiliary points.
Yeah. Or
additional strategies, sub strategies. And having that distinction is helpful in this game. With especially with the lower frequency or lower appearing terrains but higher frequency of crowns, the wasteland and the caves in this game, because they don't appear on many tiles, they don't take up much of your kingdom when you focus on them. So you're going to have a lot of this extra space that you need to take advantage of. And like you said, the fields, the wheat fields, are the easiest to pair because they show up on a lot of those types of terrains that don't show up very often.
There's also
they're usually partnered with it.
There's also an interesting thing where if you force or not force, you shouldn't like specifically go for the mines and wastes, I think. But like if you get two or three of those connected early on, it puts every other player in a position where they almost have to hate draft you. Or else you'll keep compounding those crowns. And so, because it's pretty easy to max out on points if you get every mine or every waste tile. So, yeah, like, so it forces other people to go later in the turn intentionally, which means you can go earlier in the turn the next round. So you can kind of manipulate the position that way. Likewise, if you go with forests, since they have the most doubles, you are more likely to be going first the next round if you're going forest and still get points from the double.
Right. Yeah. Because doubles are the first 12 tiles. Tiles numbered 1 through 12 are all doubles, and most of those are forests.
Specifically, 1 and 2 is fields, 3 through 3, 4, 5, 6 is forests. 7, 8, 9 is water. 10, 11 is prairies. And 12 is wastes.
Gotcha.
So water is also the second most abundant doubles in terms of tiles.
So if you want to win, figure out which of those terrains is getting less drafted. Figure out which one is open. And then try and make that your build around. But don't let that be the fields.
Right.
You're better off making the forest your build around, followed by
water, then
followed by prairies. But the prairies are better if you get the two crowned prairie territory early on.
Yes.
That's those are for
pretty good way to put it.
Sure. And those are for the abundant terrains. The less abundant terrains are very good on their own, just like picking them up if they have crowns on them, because that's just guaranteed points for just a turn, you know, worth of effort. But if they're open, absolutely go for them, because you can get a lot of points in very few turns with those, and then spend the rest of your turns just trying to get a little bit of points out of the rest of your board.
All right. I have one more strategy piece, which is opening positioning. So we briefly touched on this when we mentioned like trying to keep your pieces flexible in terms of their placement. But I think a good rule of thumb is if you get a field first, then it's okay to go a small, like, so put it vertically next to your castle as your first piece.
Lengthwise.
Yeah. But other than that, I usually would recommend putting your first piece sticking out from the castle, and then from there, either going, like, a right angle from the castle, so you have two, one sticking out in adjacent sides, or not adjacent sides, but you know, like around the castle, a T tetromino. So, you know, your piece on the, sticking out, and then one sticking out from the middle of that, or a knight shape. So the one sticking out and then the one going vertically from it, either above it or next to it. Basically, The knight is really good when you have three different terrain types showing on your pieces, because it gives you the most room to both connect them and keep them separate. Whereas, like, the right angle's good if you want to try and connect what's on the top one and what's on the side one. And the T tetromino's good when you want to have a large cluster of, like, forests or something. That's just general placement idea.
If I could try and summarize that.
Sure.
Let me know if this works, because I had a little bit of trouble following along. Sorry. With that. So let's just say if you pick one that has fields, wheat fields on it. This was mm-hmm. your first point.
Yeah.
Put it lengthwise with the wheat facing outwards. Is that the idea? Or would the wheat be facing your castle?
Wheat facing the castle.
Okay. Because... So whatever else is on the exterior of the arrangement. So essentially, if you would have like a line of three squares, it would go castle, wheat, X.
Yeah.
Okay. And then you're saying whatever you get after that, you are kind of like branching off of that end point in
yeah.
one direction or another. Or so you would just, if the next tile you draft matches that end point tile, you want to branch off from there.
Yeah.
Going at a right angle.
Yeah.
Okay.
However, if your next tile also has wheat in it, instead of the end point, you would want to put that on the, like, a right angle against the castle, with the castle being in the corner of the two pieces. Because that way you have the ability to connect the wheat really easily while also starting to connect the other two pieces you have.
Okay.
If that makes sense. And then if you don't have wheat as your first choice, but you have something like forest or water that has a lot of doubles... then mm-hmm. you could preemptively connect another forest or water to the middle to try to have a larger cluster.
So you're saying just cluster that terrain around your castle?
Yeah.
Keep it towards the middle, because it'll be easier to connect.
Yeah.
You'll have more options to connect to things than if you start to push it towards the edges. Okay.
Exactly.
Gotcha. So, yeah, okay. I think that's good enough. All right, so shall we move into the design discussion on this game?
Yes.
Okay. So, first of all, there's very clear inspiration from dominoes, like just any kind of domino game. The game's called King Domino. It's like right there. And yeah. and the main mechanic with dominoes is just matching like faces of the domino with each other.
Right, yeah.
So, you know, you play a domino game, you connect a 5 with a 5, and a 2 with a 2, and a 3 with 3, and you make a chain. In this game, you're not making a chain, you're making a grid, but you're essentially doing that. You're connecting, like, faces to one another.
Yeah.
Which is a cool example of taking, you know, a very classic type of game and modernizing it with, you know, these kind of Euro... style themes.
Right, and it's interesting that like there aren't a lot of tile placement games other than this that use 1x2 tiles instead of 1x1 tiles. You know, in most tile placement games, a single tile is a single square or hexagon or whatever.
Unless you're a Rosenberg.
Yeah.
In which case your tiles go even further beyond the 1x2 square or, arrangement.
Or you're the Mad King Ludwig, where your tiles aren't even squares sometimes. But yeah, it's like a very sensible modernization of dominoes, plus a very sensible twist on tile placement. In that regard, it keeps the same domino idea of like the information on the tiles is very straight to the point and easily readable. Like, it's very simple as to what information is on the tiles.
So I want to talk about how this game is one of the first examples of this type of game that I've seen, which is the X times Y equals points design. This is, I don't know why I don't see this more often. I think the other place where I've seen this is Bunny Kingdom. And so it's a very simple formula. you just have something that represents X and something that represents Y. You multiply them together to get points. In this game, those are crowns and spaces in a territory. And then to create a diverse, you know, plethora of strategies in the game, you just tool with the frequency of X and the frequency of Y.
Right.
So yeah. In this game, the frequency of X is the abundance of a terrain, and the frequency of Y is the frequency that crowns appear on that terrain and how many crowns appear when they do on those terrains.
Yeah. One thing that's nice about this is it's very easy to balance because it's an entirely mathematical environment.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you could almost just use a calculator and pencil to balance this type of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Usually, so far, this type of scoring is paired with some amount of drafting or competition over the same shared pool of resources.
Right. Or so if just, you, like, area control.
So, I mean, if you compare it with Bunny Kingdom, what you're doing is you're drafting cards. So there's cards that have terrains, and there's cards that have towers. In this game, there's tiles that have terrains, and there's tiles that have crowns. That you're competing over, and so that's why, you know, you don't just go for the easy, in this game, the mines and the wastelands, because they're less frequent. They're the easiest to earn points from because they earn points just on their own, but they're less frequent, so they're harder to compete over with other players.
Right. Yeah. It's a very natural way of scaling, like, these are more valuable alone. These are less valuable alone.
Mm-hmm. There's a whole lot of like strategy identity that comes from just modifying these two variables,
right?
Which is it's pretty cool. It's just like a really simple formula that like anybody could do, and just by modifying the formula along these two axes, you just get this diversity of strategy. It's like low effort for very high, you know, outcome.
Yeah. And what's really nice also is that like the scoring method is complex when you're playing as far as like its consequences, but it's really easy to learn and really easy to read at any given time. Like, mm-hmm. you can pretty quickly tell what other people's score currently is just by glancing at their board. And I think that's really useful in a drafting game that encourages reading the board and reading other people's points.
Mm-hmm.
It helps this game be a gateway game at all. It helps the pace in, you know, play time.
Mm-hmm.
And there's other things that help those, too.
It also helps to just, like, help you make decisions because since the scoring is so simple, it's very easy to you know, identify how many points any given piece is worth when you add it to your kingdom. You just say like, oh, I'm adding a crown, so that, you know, adds this many points. It adds a point per, you know, territory in my kingdom, you know, plus itself. Or it doesn't have a crown, so it just adds a number of points equal to the number of crowns that I already have in that territory.
Yeah.
So it's easy to weigh options in that case when it just comes down to points.
Something
I'd say In a gateway game, that's a very good thing because it just tells people like, hey, if you want to know what to do, you just do the thing that gives you the most points and you can figure that out really quickly in this game.
Yeah.
In a non-gateway game, I could see how that would be a little boring because that kind of choice, you know, people just make that. It's almost like the game is making your choices for you in that regard. When it comes down to just like looking at how many points each tile is worth to you, you could just say, okay, I'm just going to get the one worth the most, and then I'll get the next one worth the most, and then the end of the game happens.
Yeah.
You know? So in a gateway game, I'd say this is a very good thing. You know, this simple point scoring system that's very open and easy to calculate. But for more advanced players, it can be a little boring.
Simple, yeah. I also do want to say that the graphic design helps this, like, intuitive scoring. Because the crown, the areas that have crowns, the squares that have crowns, have like a building on them, some mm-hmm. sort of structure. And other than maybe the forests, the terrain types look pretty empty without those buildings. Like, other than the forest, they're pretty much just a single shade of color. The wastelands mm-hmm. have a bit of a gradient or like a mix going on with like some splotches, but when you have buildings, it looks a lot less empty, so it kind of visually is more pleasing to have more crowns. And that's, you can tell, for... like, there's more empty space, so I should get some more buildings.
There was a situation when we played recently where now the mine tiles don't have that same unified look because they're like pitch black, and then they have these like, you know, rocky brown beige features added to them sometimes. I think one of the mine tiles has like a little hut on it with a yellow roof, but it doesn't have a crown to it. So
only one mine tile doesn't have a crown, and I'm pretty sure it's just a rock.
Well, there was a situation where somebody was confused in the game. Oh, I think there might be a prairie tile with a hut on it that doesn't have a crown on it. So there is a little bit of confusion there where that somebody who was playing assumed that that tile had a crown on it. And then when it came to scoring, it realized that there was no crown on it. There was just a hut in the corner that looked like it could be a crown, mm-hmm. you know, at a glance. So, you know, a little bit of issue there, but not a big deal.
Yeah. But yeah, for the most part, that helps it. I want to talk about the like, for one thing, the turn order model.
Mm-hmm.
So this is very elegant, which we mentioned in our previous episode is like a mix between efficient usage of rules overhead, like pieces and components and resources, and time as well. So like, it's efficient use of multiple things, and it makes use of multiple parts of the game to do a single function, or a single part of the game to do multiple functions, I mean. In this case, it's like the whole balancing act between crowns and fewer crowns plays into the turn order. I can at least say that's pretty smart as far as design goes, because, mm-hmm. you know, we talked a huge amount about how much of an impact that makes. A lot of games that have like a malleable turn order do so because they have things that like offer catch-up mechanics through them, and the whole concept behind this game is like, it's basically that picking last will let you get points.
Mm-hmm.
There is one thing, which is that it's another thing that like makes this a great gateway game, but not as good for like a super duper competitive game, because the fact that both sides of the tiles have relevant information means that like you can't really look at the tiles without making some knowledge about them unless you don't care to memorize them. But as soon as you start memorizing like what numbers mean what, then the like sanctity of the randomness starts to get ruined.
Well, you're only supposed to draw and arrange and flip the tiles once everybody has already selected their next tile and placed the previous tile in their kingdom.
Right.
So really the only information that you have for the next tile is
the very topmost one.
The very topmost tile, if you keep that visible. There, the box can hold all the tiles. So I think when we like to stack them up outside of the box, but you could technically keep them in the box.
But like when you're randomizing and stacking the tiles.
Yeah.
There is the theory that in theory you could gain meaningful information from that. However,
you could.
Yeah. However, like I said, that's like, it's sort of a non-issue for most playgroups.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a decision made pretty much with the assumption that this isn't going to be played by the people that would do such a thing.
Right.
You know,
I mean, even if you're even if you're trying to like kind of count or seed tiles by stacking them, like usually the way that you randomize them is you just dump all the tiles out on the table, flip them face down, wash them around, and then start stacking them, you know, as a group. So right. You really only have control over like the tiles that you pick up.
Right. I'm not saying this is a problem with the game.
Yeah.
And I realize there's a lot of chances where this doesn't matter at all, but that's sort of what I'm saying is it's a decision made knowing that the audience for this game isn't going to try to min-max those types of things.
Sure.
Let's see. And also, the fact that, for the most part, terrain is pretty evenly spread throughout the top and middle numbers means that people will naturally change turn order. Because, mm-hmm. like, not every double is a forest. You know, the two highest numbers are plain double or field doubles. And once you get into the middle, everything's kind of spread evenly between those, like, 19 through 30-something tiles. So, like, just if once people figure out what they want to draft and, like, that niche they're going into, turn order will pretty naturally change. And I think mm-hmm. people will quickly find out the consequences that picking the higher numbers and lower numbers have. Which is important mm-hmm. for a gateway game, that the consequences of your actions are quickly illustrated. You know? Yeah. If somebody new to board gaming is playing this game, or like new to hobbyist board gaming, you want them to be able to get some sort of understanding of the strategy by the end of the first playthrough. And something like that helps a lot, forcing right. players to make the change.
This game, it's also pretty apparent, like, just what the frequencies are like in this game after yeah. playing through one session of it.
It's pretty easy to intuit.
It's also, the turn order is going to naturally shift over just, like, your average playthrough of this game, because, like you said, the wastelands and mines, which are appear on the highest number tiles, so they're going to appear, you know, towards the end of the list of tiles consistently, are frequently paired with planes, which appear more on the lower number tiles at the higher end of the picking spectrum.
Yeah.
So if somebody is trying to do those tiles, the higher number, later in turn order tiles as a strategy, they're naturally going to pair them with tiles that appear more frequently at the top of the turn order.
Yeah. The extremes are shifted pretty easily.
I have one more thing to talk about design-wise.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the concept of middling strategies. Ooh. So in this game, like we talked about how there's a very clear split in this game between the prairies and the wastelands.
Mm-hmm.
And that is because that is because there is a clear split. The frequencies and the abundantness of wastelands and prairies there's a significant difference between them, that you would compare the prairies to the other three high frequency ones, and the wasteland you would pair off with the mine at the low frequency ones. So that's because this game doesn't really have a middling strategy. You know, either a strategy is low X, you know, low abundance of terrain, high Y, high abundance of crowns, or it's the opposite, high X, low Y. There's no medium X, medium Y.
Yeah.
And my first, you know, thought as to why that is because there's not really a strategic identity with that, you know, middling strategy. Like, what does it mean if something is mid X, mid Y?
Yeah.
You can obviously say if something's high X, low Y, that means that multiple people can draft it, but the crowns are going to be contested, so it's going to be harder to activate those points. If you are going for low X, high Y, it's usually guaranteed points when you can get it, but it's going to be highly contested because there's not a lot to go around.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, what does mid X, mid Y mean? You can't really say it's just there. So I think this game doesn't have that because there's no real identity to it strategy-wise.
I also want to mention that flavorfully, the four high X, low Y terrain types are like life resources. It's like food and shelter. So mm-hmm. fishing, farming, animal husbandry, and, you know, forest, which is kind of a mix. And then the two low X, high Y are like rare minerals. They're like luxury resources.
Sure.
So it's kind of hard to think of like a flavor to fit a terrain that would fit between those two.
Sure. But just mechanically.
Oh, like, yeah. There's
there's like almost you almost can't think of a way to describe it mechanically. Yeah. So now I think that the reason why this doesn't exist in this game in particular is because it is a one-dimensional game, in that you're just dealing with these axes, you know, this the frequency and abundance. There's not like an additional aspect to any given terrain or strategy. It's just you're just balancing those two things. So, you know, I could see the existence of a middling strategy being in a game if there was some other mechanical identity ascribed to it by another part of the game, like say the terrains also say they also generate, like, I don't know, defenses or something. Like the middling strategy would have the most defenses because there's no other like identity to it strategy wise.
Right.
I think this is just more so a lesson in game design for like any other game, that when you're looking at a similar type of like strategy array, when you have like low end, high abundance, high end, highly contested, like high end, high risk, low end, low risk, you know, that middle portion doesn't have an identity unless there's some other part to the game that gives it an identity.
Right. Think of it like, yeah, think of it like a grid where you have your two types. So either crowns or fields, and you have high and low, high space, high crowns would be too broken because everybody would be vying for those because it's the most points, even if they split them up. And low space, low crowns would not be worth going for at all because it'd be so volatile. So just like to encourage good play patterns and healthy gameplay, you kind of already can't go to either of those extremes, which means you already have high X, low Y, and low X, high Y.
Right. And that's just balance.
Yeah. I do have a few more things I want to mention.
Okay.
One is that because you don't place your current tile before you see what next tile you're going to play, it kind of helps save some time. I think of it like there is a time in some games that's like pure calculation, where you don't have a whole lot of info for the future. So it's like you're either making a lot of assumptions and guesses or a lot of like super hard planning. And that's when a lot of analysis paralysis can come in. Mm-hmm. But by showing the like outcome of some of the next turn, aka what tile you're going to place next, then it lets you make your current decision as far as how you want to position your current tile a lot easier to think of and a lot easier to come up with. You know, if you're picking something that's completely different, you might position your current tile one way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that does help make people realize the importance of how they position tiles better, just because, like, from the first turn, after you've picked your first tile and you see what's coming up next, you can say, like, okay, the next tile is going to fit like this, so I want these to be close together, so I want to position it like this. And right. The fact that you can do that on the very first turn means that, like, a new player is already thinking about positioning in some way, about how they want to connect things together. And
it also helps that...
Yeah, and...
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, and I was going to say, and like I said, during the strategy portion, if you're not picking first, then you can already see what other people are picking as well, which means mm-hmm. you can already try to avoid those.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say also, is that when you have to make your choice of what the next tile you're going to pick is, the people that go before you have already eliminated some options, you know, from you. So as the turn order progresses, you know, a new player has to weigh less options, make less decisions, because there's stuff that's already been, you know, claimed, so they don't even need to consider it, you know.
Yeah.
If a new player were to go first, they would obviously have a big decision to make because they have to pick from four tiles. Usually that's not hard because in such a simple game, you just pick whatever tile matches the terrain that you already have.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, you just pick whichever one is worth the most points on that given turn. But yeah, it's exceedingly simple, the decision that you have to make in this game.
Yeah. And one more thing about this game that I have to say in regards to its graphic design is making a kingdom with like a few large connected territories is a lot more visually pleasing than making a kingdom with a lot of small territories. So mm-hmm. it kind of visually encourages you to make those large kingdoms because yeah. like, you know, it looks better. It's a reward for good planning and strategy is a nice looking kingdom.
It's even just rewarding to connect one piece next to another piece in a very, you know, very good way. Like,
yeah.
like for example, if you had two tiles on, you know, different sides with enough space between them for one tile, you know, lengthwise maybe, and that tile you place makes both connections, you know, properly, it feels very satisfying to do something like that. So
oh, yeah.
just the thing that's good to do in this game feels good. That's a very important, I think that's like a key part of game design. Mark Rosewater details that, like, the thing that's best to do, you want to make that the most fun thing to do, the most yeah. satisfying thing to do in the game, because you want people to feel good as they are playing properly, good. As they're winning,
yeah
yeah, as they're executing good strategy, you want them to also feel good doing it.
Yeah.
All right,
that's a good place to end off the strategy portion.
Yep, that'll be our end of our strategy discussion, and that is the end of our episode on similar King Domino. Similar games. So
we mentioned Bunny Kingdom.
We mentioned Bunny Kingdom, which has the same scoring rubric, concept, which is yeah. you know, X times Y, but it doesn't count the number of spaces. It counts different things that are more. It takes more effort to manage your scoring and strategy.
It's not a linear correlation between the X and the Y.
When Matthew says linear, he means linear.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Because at some point it will peak and plateau off.
In Bunny Kingdom, it's not about the size of your territory necessarily. You need to make big territories that are connected because you build structures in them, and you need the room for those structures. But yeah, it does plateau off. It doesn't go off into space multiplicatively. And then there's also a lot of like potential for bonus points with cards that don't affect the board. There's like just cards that are purely in there to give you bonus points. And by the way, it's all about drafting cards rather than tiles.
Yeah.
There's also a sort of expansion sequel type game called Queen Domino, which is essentially the same game. The tiles, I think, are slightly different. I'm not sure if they are. I think they're slightly different. But the game Queen Domino is essentially King Domino, but it adds another dimension with resources. There's a resource that you collect. I think it's just money. And you spend that money at a trade row to buy structures that you add to your kingdom. And those structures will give you bonus points in a number of ways. And then there's also an aspect of manipulating the trade row to like hate out things that your opponents will want to build.
Yeah. And then
but it's essentially the same game, but just with an extra dimension added to it.
Yeah. And then I just want to mention Azul for being another good gateway tile placement game, where it's easy to read the board and what other people are going to go for.
Mm-hmm. Also a Spiel winner.
Yeah.
All right. So that'll be our episode on King Domino. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening.
If you like to, you can leave us a comment or a review on any podcasting platform. You can follow us on any podcasting platform. Get us in your feed to get the new episodes as soon as they're uploaded. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. If you want to hit us up with a suggestion for a game or topic that you'd like to hear us cover, just drop us a line on Facebook and Twitter at BG Bros Cast. You can go to our website, bgbcast.com, where we have all of our episodes posted and tagged. So if you're looking for an episode for a specific game that we've covered already, you can go through the tags there to find the name of that game, and that'll take you directly to the episode where we discussed it. If you don't see an episode for a game that you want to hear us about, again, just hit us up on Facebook and Twitter at BG Bros Cast. On our website, you can find a link to our TeePublic store, teepublic.com/user/BGBcast, where we have merch with our cool logo on it. Go there, check that out, buy it, rep it. We love it. That's enough for BG Bro plugs. So let's go over to Matt plugs.
I stream on twitch.tv/twack. That is twitch.tv/twak. I stream on most weekdays from 11 a.m. Central Time to 2 or 3 p.m. Central Time, give or take an hour. I stream a lot of adventure games, competitive games. I speedrun. I'm going to be doing a lot of speedruns in the upcoming week to prepare for some stuff. I've been playing through a game called Anodyne 2, which you might be able to see me write about on the Matt Corner, or the Matt Column. Matt Corner? I don't remember what I called it.
I think it's a column.
On the BGBcast website, under the Articles tab, I write about game design, about writing. My most recent article was about the game Enter the Gungeon and how it combines flavor and gameplay. I'm still writing new stuff. It's just taking a bit to get everything together. You can also follow me on Twitter at Matt Craig Gaming to get updates on when I stream and when I post stuff. And also you can join my Discord server through the Twitch page to get updates on when I go live and discuss and talk with other fans of the stream and the podcast and see some pictures from my frequent trips to the zoo.
All right, that does it for Matt Plugs, and that does it for our episode. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next week.
See ya. On, oh, whoop.